Wow, that's neat.
Yeah, it's a cool little system. Nice. And with this one, I can put in four different mics and then still get the ambient sound. Because I bought it, we're going to do the those ball games, which didn't work out. But I'd have like the two commentators on this side talking, and then we'd have the sound of the crowd as well. So,
Nice.
Okay, well, for the record, Jerry, your first and last name, please.
My name is Geraldine Stonechild.
Okay, and which residential school did you attend?
I went to Librette.
What were some of the memories of residential school? Good or bad? Whatever you're willing to share.
Well, it was lonely. It was a lonely place for me. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a very good feeling. It was very punishing. Excuse me.
No worries.
but it was a it wasn't a very good experience for me, because I was put there because I had nowhere to go. I had my mother had left us. And so we had nowhere to go. She was drinking at the time. And I got home from school and there was no one home. And so we walked to my aunt's, which is my dad's sister, and she lived on Star Blanket. And so we walked there, and it was in June. At the end of June, it was actually the last day of school. And so we went over there and we stayed there. All the groceries that I had bought from school, like I went shopping. My mom gave me some money and I went shopping, and so I left them at the house, walked over to my aunt's in Star Blanket, and then she said, "Well, I don't think your mom is coming back, so we're gonna have to go get the food." So we did, and I never heard from my mom for 2 years after that. In the meantime, we were left at my aunt's, and she already had like her own 7 or 8 kids. And so with us, me and my sister, there was 2. So it was kind of a burden. So that's how we ended up in boarding school. And it was quite, I had already been through in foster homes. So I kind of, boarding school was very different for me. Like, it was a very, I can just say it was lonely, and it was a punishing thing. Like, I remember strappings, and strappings, I had received 3 of them, and they were with a big strap, like in our heads. The big guy, he just strapped us, and it was for little things. I thought it was little things because there was a culvert, right? And all the girls used to go there. Well, I wanted to see where the culvert went. And there were smoking in that room. So in the way down in the culvert, there was a shack. So that's where the culvert led to. So that was my first strapping. I went in the culvert. I wanted to see where it went, but we all came out smelling like smoke. So there was a bunch of us that got strapped, right? It was very shocking. I was shocked, like at the degree of punishment. For like they didn't even ask if they just sent us up there, and he pulled out his strap, and boy, if you pulled your hands away, he strapped you right here, right on the forearms. And so we were all bruised and we had welts, and like I was shocked that for that little thing we were strapped. But I received altogether in that school 3 strappings, and twice where I was under suspicion of smoking, which I was underage. I couldn't even get cigarettes at the time, you know, and I ran away. So I got strapped for that too. So, you know, I ran away a couple of times from there.
How old were you on this?
Nine and ten.
9 and 10, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
still a child. Yeah.
And at the time, there was a lot of people that didn't like it there. So there was fires. They used to set fires to try, because then they'd know that if there was a fire, there'd be significant damage, and they all get to go home, right? And so that was good for them, but for us, we didn't have anywhere to go. Like, my aunt had put us in there, but I wasn't sure if we were welcome back to her house. So we were always the last two. And Anita McLeod would always take us, and she'd phone around. And so, yeah, the first year we stayed with my auntie on Star Blanket. And the second year, one of my other aunties, she came, and she said, "I'll be looking after you." She said, I'll come and get you." So she did every weekend, eh?
Yeah. Okay.
And but it was various. It was a strict place. Like there was some good parts. I guess the good parts about it, you learned how to do stuff right, or either get a strap, or have to do it all over again, but you learned how to do right, to do it right. Or, you know, some of the punishments, if you didn't get a strapping, if you didn't soup your stairs right, you did it with a toothbrush. That's how they did it. That's how they punished us. So that was, if you didn't straighten, have all your beds in a row, they'd come and push all the beds out a row, and you'd have to do all of your beds over again. If you didn't wake up on time, your whole bed was flipped with you on it. Flipped right over on a floor. So to me, that's not a very nice place. It's not a very nice place to raise. I would never do that to my children, right? So the way I grew up, and I tell my kids stories, I said, you wouldn't even last in a place like that. And there was also what went on in the playroom, like the dorms. See, there was junior dorm, intermediate, and seniors, right? And sometimes there was a lot of fighting, you know? There was, who knows what, hey? Like, there was fighting. And that's where you learn to fight. If you didn't learn to fight back, well, you were picked on, right? And so that's kind of where I learned to fight and to take up for myself. Otherwise, you were bullied, right? They kept on bullying you unless you fought back, right? So there was a lot of dynamics going on there in that school. I didn't like boarding school. I didn't like anything about it. I remember, you know, this one time, my sister, for example, some of the supervisors were quite mean. Like, my sister, she used to chew on pencils, eh? And she had this very bad habit. So she chewed on the supervisor's pencil. And that's when the supervisors, they were allowed to smoke in the dorm, in the playrooms, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And so she put her cigarette out, and she told all of us to go, and we all sat in a circle, and she got my sister, and she made her eat that butt in front of all of us. Yeah. So that's some of the things. For me, it was strappings. The second year, I got assaulted. I got knocked out by a supervisor. It started, my friend, she got into an argument with the supervisor. I don't know what it was about, but it had nothing to do with me. And so I didn't think nothing at all. And we went to the dining room, and like I was eating, and then I was sitting across from this girl that was having issues with that supervisor, and I didn't think nothing. I was very, this was a shocking, it was very shocking for me. All of a sudden that supervisor came, and I thought she was gonna get after that girl she was having an argument with that morning, eh? Instead, she come around by my, around behind me, and she just grabbed me by the hair and flipped me back, and I lost consciousness. I got knocked out because it was a cement floor, and I, right in front of the whole dining room, like, seen that, and when I came to, she was dragging me out of the dining room by the hair. Yeah. And everybody seen it, and even the other supervisors seen that, and they happened to be from the next reserve where I was living with my aunt. So I never said anything, but I never wanted to go back after that. And then somebody, one of those supervisors, told my aunt what happened. And I never said anything, because he never said anything about the incidents that happened, right? Because nothing would ever come of it.
Yeah, get another strapping for it.
He couldn't say anything, eh? Like, so I never told my aunt about what happened to me, and I didn't know why. I never had an issue with that girl, that woman, and so I was offered no medical attention, no nothing, no sent up to the nurse. But one time when I went up to the nurse. I remember her name was Wendy, and she asked me, who did that to you? Because she seen the bruises on my arms, right? And she hugged me, and she said, that's not right. And that was, for me, it was the only time that I thought anything was wrong, right? So it was a painful time for me in that place, because you had nobody to go to. They didn't talk to you, right? They just, you know, you were just like robots. Get up 7 a.m., get the shower, and do your chores, and, you know, head to the chapel, and then the chapel school, right? Like, it was all... This was really early in the morning, too, that these things would...
Do you remember what time it would be that you had to get up?
6.
Okay.
Yeah. And some people would run the hills, right? Because Librette wanted the best athletes and stuff like that. So some would get up and run the hills and come back. But what really... bothered me about this situation is these were Native people that were doing us to us, you know. Mm-hmm. We had one lady who was a nun, and she was quite strict, and she was quite scary, actually. We were all scared of her.
Do you remember her name?
Her name was Irene, yeah.
Okay.
And but there was no one, like, the kid, you were always wrong, like, there was, you know. So I just really didn't like boarding school at all from those incidents. And, you know, you're always to blame. There was no, they didn't talk to you about what happened or whatever, you know, like, with getting strappings, like, you smelt like smoke, so therefore you were smoking. But in meanwhile, you know, like, that's where they used to go to smoke, the senior girls, right? Was in the culverts, and so that's where we followed them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the meantime, we didn't have any cigarettes. We were too young. We couldn't get any, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't give us any.
Yeah.
Because they'd get in trouble, too. But the fact is that they never asked you, like, did you, you know, were you smoking? No, it was go up to that room, right?
Yeah.
And on the other side, and what I seen on the other side too, there was like on the boys' side, oh man, we used to go, we had to go through their playroom to get to the gym. But, you know, you'd see the supervisors, you know, rough, you know, if the boys were fighting, they would rough them up, man. They would have them right up against the lockers. And it was, there was a lot, I found it was a lot of violence, you know, that probably, like in this day and age, we probably wouldn't do that now, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's that, it was just...
Yeah, it wouldn't be allowed this day.
Yeah, it wouldn't be allowed. But for me, it was a very painful time to be, because I had no parents, right? And I had no really... So when I got assaulted by the supervisor, my aunt came and got me, and my aunt went and talked to that supervisor, and she put her right up against the wall, and she said, "Don't you ever touch any of these girls like that." And she said, "You should have told me. You should have been taken to the hospital. Somebody should have done something." But I didn't say anything, because you didn't, you know?
Yeah.
And... so after that, that's why I didn't want to go back, right? I wouldn't. It was the loneliest trip on that road to Librette. I still feel that way sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It brings back some feelings. But it was abusive. I endured a lot of abuse in that school by the people that were in authority. And it's just something you have to endure. It's a lonely place, right? It's an institution, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's I'm getting from a lot of survivors is if they weren't abused, then it was the loneliness that got to them. That
mm-hmm.
was, and I understand both of that. Like it's. Especially being taken and not knowing why. There was a lot of questions of like last day of school and they just got taken. They don't remember by who. They don't remember why. They were just taken. There was no explanation at all. Still.
Yeah.
So obviously it wasn't the greatest of times for anybody. But do you remember any kind of the education you got? Do you recall? Classes? Do you feel like you got a decent education?
I think I remember the teachers. One was Janice Sloan the first year, and then the other year we had a Filipino lady. Her name was Mrs. Chato, and she was good. And I think that, like, I think the education part was okay, you know. I just think that what went on in the other building wasn't okay,
right.
You know, like that kind of stuff. But the, you know, I don't know why it had to. To me, they didn't have a lot of parenting skills. They didn't, you know, and that's just probably. What's been done, like, you know, like we accepted that, okay, this is what's going to happen, you do this and you're going to get the strap, you know, and that the guy that strapped us was a big man, and he had this concho. I remember it just used to fly up and hit him in the face every time he came down and hit us, you know, that's how much force he hit us with. And yeah, so one person, and you know, the supervisor acted like she was right. Oh, good, yeah. You know, it was just abuse, you know? And she, in some way, felt good that she contributed to sending us up there without even... You know what I mean? She was like justifying herself.
Yeah,
like, you
she
know?
Was thinking she was justifying it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crystal
like I, to me, I would never do that to anybody what I went through. I would never, no. No, but I know what an I know how it is to be in an institution where you got, you know, you got to follow those rules. You know, like you have certain, and it is a schedule, and you have to, and you have to follow it, and you have to do your chores right, or else, you know, you always had that or else thing, and the or else was to get physically harmed, right? That was the end result. If you didn't do it, that supervisor could send you up to the office. That guy won't even ask any questions. He will just pull out his strap and strap you. You know, like what kind of a justice system is that in a boarding school? You know, in some kind of school, whatever. What's that teaching you, you know? I still, and most of those people now are gone. You know, that why when I went, and a lot of people that I went to school with are gone, you know, they all, a lot of them turned into addicts, myself one, and alcoholics, myself too, and I've straightened out my act now for a number of years now, and I've had to look back on boarding school, and because there was lots of pain there, you know, like I wouldn't, like I said, I would never treat anybody like that, you know? But that's the way they victimized people, and they assaulted the kids, you know? They didn't teach them anything, you know? They said, you know, so. So that's kind of what I went through, and I've had to talk about a lot of things.
I was going to ask, how did you overcome all that? Because some of the questions you have to ask, like,
yeah.
Obviously there's mental anguish, obviously your emotional well-being. Physically, is there any adverse, like, did you feel your body has been damaged by any of the beatings? Or the...
Well, my mental and emotional part of me, yeah, was, I became an addict and, an alcoholic, and when after I had my first child, I started drinking again and stuff like that. But I straightened out because I realized that I have to look after this baby, and so I went to AA. My mom was in AA already. My mom had come back after 2 years. She came back in 1979. Yeah, she came to get us. And so she sobered up. But after I had my first child in 1985, I was an addict for probably maybe a few months, 6 months or so, and I decided to straighten out. And so I went to AA meetings because it seemed to be helping my mom. And there I found a sponsor, and from there I used to talk to her about things that bothered me, and she said, you know, maybe you need to go to treatment because you need to find out about yourself. She said, find out about your emotions, she said. Because you need to talk about those things. See, and I was brought up that those things weren't important, right? So you never talked about those things. So you never talked about anything you went through. And even when I was in boarding school, you never, whatever, you know, happened, you weren't supposed to say anything about it, you know? And it wasn't encouraged anyway to talk about your emotions and stuff like that. I never remember talking about anything to any supervisor or anything like that. Like, they were just happy if you were quiet, you know, and not doing nothing or whatever, you know, like, it wasn't a nurturing place. It wasn't an encouraging place for me. And so I had to years I after I went to AA, I went to a treatment center, and from there I went back to meetings, and I had a lot of self-help, and I've had a lot of what do you call those psychologists, counselors
Sure.
that I've reached out to, and you have to go physically reach out. You can't just, and I knew I needed help because I was suicidal, and I needed to get to know why I was the way I was and why I felt like I wasn't worth anything, And a lot of times that's the way I felt in boarding school, because of the abuse that was in there, right? But what I can get, what really bothers me, is that these were our own people doing that to us, like when I watched my sister eat a butt in front of everybody, I thought, how degrading, like at the time it hurt, right? But you can't do anything, right? And what was the point, right? When I look back on it to this day, I looked, what was the point of making her eat that butt? Is she gonna stop chewing on pencils? I don't think so, Yeah. So some of these punishments were, I thought they were uncalled for, like some of them were, some of those, actually a lot of those supervisors, they needed help, Like if they can come and treat kids like that, then they shouldn't have been even in that place. But so over the years, I've had a lot of counselors. And counselors too, when I lived on a in the band, like I'd utilize those counselors from wellness, and I'd talk to them, and that's how I would get things out and take a look at them, so they're not running around in my head over and over again. But I've really had to open up and talk about these things, because man, I was really, really messed up. I was doing hardcore drugs, and I was doing a lot of stuff. I didn't fool around with weed, and to me, those weren't even, I was into the real hard stuff. Yeah. So I had this really good sponsor that really helped me out a lot, and she'd come and pick me up. And at the time too, I had a relationship that was, well, he was just as much of an addict, and he was out and about going his own way while I was trying to sober up and straighten out and look after myself. I knew I had to get, whatever was bothering me had to come out. It had to. So I went back to the rehab in Regina, and I was in this group therapy thing, and that's the place where you talk about everything, right? You talk about, she'll give you a subject, and you sit around, we'll all talk about stuff. It'll be your turn, and then you get feedback from everybody. And so I went to that. It was called group therapy. So I reached out to a lot of things in my life. And a lot of counselors to help me to get back on track. Yeah, because I realized that it is true, if you don't look after yourself, then you can't look after anybody, And my mom has already been sober, she was sober many, many years, and she's lost all her kids to addiction. They all died young. Yeah, she, every one of us in 1979, when I got out of boarding school, that was the only year we were all together. One Christmas in 1979, that was the last time we were all together. Everybody was alive. And then in January, my sister died. She got killed by her husband. He shot her, and then he shot himself. And they left a nine-month-old with us. And me and my mom raised that boy. 3 months after my brother committed suicide, he was found across the field from where we lived. And then a couple years later, my brother hung himself. And then my other brother died of alcohol poisoning, they think, yeah. So out of 8 kids, my mom only has 2 left now. And she's gone too. Yeah, so there's just me and my sister Ethel now. And we were the ones that were in boarding school. Yeah. Yeah. So that's how I help myself. I still go to meetings, you know. And I still talk to my AA friends. I still have lots of AA connections. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So whenever I need to, my one good friend I used to talk to passed away last October. Her name is Susie, and she helped me lots when I first sobered up. I used to travel with her to go to, but wherever I can, if I feel I need to, I'll find someone. I'll find an elder. I'll find someone to talk to, because that's what's gonna keep me sober. Yeah. So I struggle with a lot of things right now. I got my son. He's an addict and he's in detox right now. Things, life goes on, but I have to take care of myself and keep myself sober, you know. And I do a lot of praying, you know. I pray a lot because there's some things that I don't have any control of, you know. A lot of things back there, I didn't have control of those things, you know, like what happened to me, In boarding school, I couldn't control those things, you know. And I had to forgive in order for me to go on, you know. Because it's not accepting what they did. Well, I have learned to accept it. But I have to forgive in order for me to go on and be happy. Because if I let it turn... you know, if I'm bitter about everything, I won't be happy, you know?
Yeah. You okay? You good?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell you, well, do you recall any stories or anybody attending the File Hill School and Farm?
Let's see. Well, my mom attended school. And I'm not sure, she was in a couple of them, so she might have been in that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Remember any stories of possibly any bodies in the area? We had some people say they remember their parents saying, "Don't go play over there because there might be something."
Yeah, I remember those schools. I was still small and those schools were still up, and that's what the story was like. Don't go, that's haunted. You know, and so we never went in there. You know, I was still young when those schools were up, but my mom used to tell horrific tales of stories of abuse. You know, like I thought, well, you know what, they had it worse than us. You know, because she used to be a fluent Cree. She used to speak her language, and she had to have a translator to say what she needed or what she, you know, to communicate.
Sure. Okay.
And sometimes she couldn't, you know, they would beat her for speaking her language, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that's that stuff. She said, I couldn't help it. She said, I didn't know how to tell them, and then so they would hit her. Yeah, they would hit her and whack her with what do you call those sticks? Some kind of ruler sticks or something
The
like that.
yardstick.
Yeah,
Yeah, the
yeah.
yardstick or something.
And that's how she learned English. She learned how to talk English like that. Yeah.
Force.
Yeah.
Forced assimilation, let's go. So, in regards to the next phase of this the residential school project, now we're gonna the elders are asked to join one of two clubs, the reclamation or the memorialization of the two basic differences, because one, we have to go and in a good way go back to that land and reclaim it, like where the old school was, little grounds up there, and also find out definitely if there are any bodies there. So that includes a ground penetrating radar and stuff along that stuff. And then the other committee is going to be in charge of creating a memorial of some sort. Not just a picture. It'd be nice if we get all the names. That's first and foremost. Like that'd be the ideal approach. But then also something else in like in regards to like have an architecture put it together, an architect put it together, so it's gonna last forever, kind of thing. And any ideas in regards to how we can memorialize not only about the kids that were there, and then the students and the families? And any ideas? Because we have some of the ideas that come across have maybe obviously get the list of the names first and foremost, or as many as we can, because that's part of closure. The family will see that name, right, and that'll help supporting some of that closure. But also somebody saying maybe there's an old playground there. We can maybe make it not so, not bring it back to life, but clean it up so it's a memorial for all the kids that were there. Or another one said we maybe do put like silhouettes of kids, like five silhouettes of children in memory of all the children that were on that ground before. So something on that lines, if anything comes to mind, any idea on how we would memorialize them or remember them, I guess. How would you like to see your mother remembered if she was part of that school?
Well, I mean, yeah, if you could have something built, like some kind of a monument or a statue or something like that, and have the names, but you know, I don't know if that's something to say who was there and.
Yeah, it's because you have to remember them in a good way, right? Because
Yeah.
we all have to heal from this, right? And I'm not saying we all went through the same thing, right? Everybody, it could be the same thing, but we all dealt with it differently, right? And what I've been finding is that some of the survivors talk about their feelings and how they're dealing with them, how they feel things, and I empathize with that, and then I realize that that's where that generational trauma comes in, right? Because those feelings are passed down from my mom and dad from residential school, right? So it's an ugly cycle that we have to, you know, a lot of us are awake now and realize that, you know, we can't continue this, right? So it's I empathize. Like, I didn't go to residential school, but I've definitely felt the effects with my parents being there. Like, it was mom or dad never said they loved me, you know, that was never, thinking back, it's they never said that, you know. They were encouraging to a certain extent, but the whole outward love, the outward display of love was never there, right? And I can't blame them for that, because that's what they went through. Yeah, this is probably the toughest project I've ever had to take on, because I don't want to say that I know what you're going through, but I feel what you went through, especially the loneliness part. One of those survivors said, you know, they didn't go through the abuse, but every night getting ready for bed and the quietness. and they'd hear other kids crying. It's like, for some reason, I can feel that. Anything else you'd like to add in closing?
I'm glad there's no more schools like that, you know?
Yes.
You know, to teach kids with pain, you know, any kind of pain.
Yeah.
It's not right, and it leaves the children with pain. So I still got very strong feelings about residential school. But that's all I've.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what I've been asking to do, like, since that's all said and done, put that aside now, but to leave on a good note in your mind, do you have any good or humorous stories of your family that you think of that brings a smile to your face? Some that. Either you and your sister, and nothing to do with residential school, just something that will brings a smile to your face whenever you think about it.
Like about me and my family?
Yeah, yeah. Or community or whatever.
Well, I think of my puppy. She had
That's
eight
right.
puppies.
I always remembered your dog.
She had eight
puppies.
Puppies.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that's a good thing. And yeah. And I'm moving forward all the time.
Yes,
you know?
You have to. Yeah.
Yeah.
So are your dogs spoken for yet?
No.
None?
No, none
not
of them. None
no,
of
not
them.
Even any
of I don't even know. Like the first three were females.
Okay.
But I don't know what the other five are yet. Because, like, we just moved them to her cage, and then she was like, arr! Yeah, she didn't like us moving from my bed to my...
Okay.
That's where she had them,
sure.
In my bed, because that's where she sleeps, eh? So so once we put her in a cage, she was really like, arr! She didn't let us touch them, so we don't know what they are yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'll get to them. But she's doing well with them.
Yeah.
Like, even though she's just a little dog with
sure.
So many puppies.
Oh, was it how many?
Eight.
Oh
yeah.
Gosh, wow.
Like, I didn't think she'd have them that many.
That many. Yeah, I saw the picture before. Like, she was pretty round.
Yeah.
Pretty full there. Pretty uncomfortable looking.
But, yeah, but I'm excited to get home to them.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Dai's been talking about them getting a pup for herself. Oh my gosh. Since she fell.